Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Yes, after the first commercial break, will be Stan Hess, political and social commentator, now hailing from the western part of the United States. Stan's a very interesting guy. He started out in conservative Republicanism. He later became a Trotskyite. He is now involved in Euro-American politics. Very fascinating guy by the name of Stan Hess. I think you're going to enjoy him. We're going to have a chat for the next 3 hours after the first commercial break. As far as the news is concerned, not very much has changed in the last couple of days or so. Things seem to be getting worse in Lebanon. Things are obviously bad in Iraq. There's still talk, of course, of going into this situation in Iran. And as we look at this whole circumstance that is developing both in the Middle East as well as domestically, it becomes abundantly obvious that we are moving toward a very dreadful circumstance from which there might be no exit. Seems to me that as we look at some of the news that's been coming forth as a result of the political debates of a week ago, Ron Paul seems to be having some amazing impact within the Republican Party and potentially within the country. It's become very obvious from looking what the Washington Post has said about him, as well as what has emanated from Fox News, that people from left to right are starting to get worried that this anti-war, paleo-conservative, libertarian Republican congressman is starting to resonate with more people out there in the hinterlands. Sheldon Richman has a piece today at the Future Freedom Foundation entitled, "Thank You, Ron Paul." And Sheldon goes on to say that Ron Paul, a Republican congressman running for president, is saying what needs to be said about the 9/11 attacks and the Iraq War. Clearly, his rivals in the news media can't handle the truth. At the most recent Republican debate, Paul not only repeated his opposition to the illegal and unconstitutional war, but he also identified 50 years of U.S. intervention in the Middle East as a major contributing factor in Al-Qaeda's attacks in 2001. Have you ever read the reasons they attacked us? They attacked us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years. We've been in the Middle East, Paul said. Paul thus becomes the first person in mainstream politics, he's been in Congress many years, to acknowledge that U.S. foreign policy has had bad consequences not only for people in the Middle East, but for Americans at home as well. A government cannot take sides in so many deep-seated conflicts for as long as the U.S. government has without acquiring enemies and provoking retaliation. It doesn't take much knowledge of history and human nature, not to mention the official 9/11 Commission report, to see this. It's about time it was said in such a prominent forum. Of course, the reaction was stunningly absurd. Fox News questioner Wendell Goler said in a follow-up, "Are you suggesting we invited the 9/11 attack, sir?" Let's examine the question. To invite something is to desire the thing invited. Paul suggested no such thing. And who is we? Goler's question implies that Paul was saying the American people or America invited the attacks. But Paul was talking about American policymakers, not the American people. So the question was way off the mark and may have been an attempt to bait Paul. He wouldn't take the bait. Quote, "I'm suggesting that we listen to the people who attacked us and the reason they did it," he said. In other words, the people who masterminded the attack did not say they did it because we Americans are rich or free or non-Muslim. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, Public Broadcasting Network. We'll return with Stan Hess. Stay tuned.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Joined today by Stan Hess, who is one of the more interesting political and social commentators I think you'll ever come across. Stan has had quite a background, going all the way from conservative republicanism to Trotskyite Marxism to Euro-American politics over the course of his lifetime. He comes out of what he describes as a blue-collar background, and he's an interesting, fascinating fellow because he has reached a point to where he has jettisoned many of the presuppositions of the political left at the same time that he has come to believe that the methodology of the left, the confrontational methodology of the left of the 1960s, does have some merit in his view in regard to conveying some of the political positions of the Euro-American community that have not been in vogue in recent years, as we have seen a balkanization of America in terms of the racial political landscape. And Stan comes to us today from Idaho. Stan, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm waking up, Mark, but
yeah,
I've got my coffee here.
I'm doing the same thing. You know, I struggle with that from morning to morning because for many, many years I was kind of a night guy and working into the wee hours. Now, of course, I'm trying to get up and get my day started more early in the morning, and that's sometimes a challenge. But You know, Stan, when we get into your political background and your biographical background, I think we need to start taking the listeners through things from day one and just bringing them up to a particular point where you are now. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't know. In some ways, I'm typical of a lot of people who I refer to as European Americans, and you would probably say white Christians. Of course, I don't like that name white anymore because it doesn't define anything, because it's not a precise definition, because white, according to the census, white non-Hispanic means everybody from northern India west throughout Asia and then all the way to the Atlantic shores in terms of ancestry. And so when people see the census and they say, well, there's still 71% white non-Hispanic, that takes in Arabic people, northern Indians. In fact, if you go to the most wanted criminals, I guess it's the U.S. Marshals Service or whatever it is, you'll see what is designated as white. There's some very dark people there, so it's very imprecise, and it's done for that purpose, to confuse people and to think that they're not in jeopardy of losing their status in this country. But I started out as I grew up in Houston, Texas, and I remember being involved supporting Republicans at that time, which was not the most popular thing. Texas was a Democratic state, but I supported Republicans probably because I lived on the better side of town, and Republicanism was like I said, not looked upon as the dominant political posture in Texas at that time. But I basically just followed my parents and what they believed in. My parents supported Dwight David Eisenhower for president, and I remember getting real excited about Ike, and you know, we like Ike, and wearing that button when I was a small youngster. And things started happening in the world in terms of the integration issue and civil rights for blacks and desegregating lunch counters. And I found that interesting because I'd grown very close. Since I lived on the better part of town, my parents had a black maid who lived on our property, and we were very fond of her, and I started learning about black people through her. But of course, I learned about it from a privileged position, as the left would say. But I started identifying with blacks and how they had been mistreated, and I couldn't understand about lower income whites and why they hated blacks so much. And so, of course, we lived on the best part of town, and we didn't have the ethnic problems that the lower-income whites had. But what I found out later, and I'll kind of jump to the future, and then I'll backtrack again, is that the powers to be play one ethnic group off against another, and so the lower-income whites, who I used to look down my nose at, they were scrapping just for survival, and they were mistreated so much by the wealthier whites who owned the businesses and stuff that they wanted to feel better than somebody else, and because there were these black people there that were treated worse than the lower-income whites, they thought that they had to fight for their position. So anyway, the key thing was that I started learning about ethnicity through these desegregation efforts, and then I was watching stuff on television, and it seemed so distant from me because I was always shielded from that. I went to private school. And most of us at school, we all supported basically blacks because we didn't understand what was going on with whites. And so this is the kind of background I had when I was younger. And then what happened is I started rebelling against my father. My father was an alcoholic, but also my father was somebody who mistreated me and ran me down, and I really didn't understand it at the time. Actually, I found out later that he really shouldn't have been in his marriage. I think he married my mother for money, but I didn't understand that at the time. And so my father let his frustrations out on me because he didn't really love my mother. So anyway, I started rebelling and went through high school and was a Republican but was rebelling against my father. And when college started, I had a chance to I went to Texas Tech for 2.5 years in Lubbock, and I started understanding more about the world and started looking at different ideas. And I remember I went to Texas Tech in 1962, and in the fall of 1962, and in the spring of 1963, I ran into a guy named Dick Revis, who's now I think he's a teacher, professor at a college in North Carolina, but at that time he was a student like me, and he was a real rabble-rouser, and he was talking about the civil rights movement, and there was a Latin American minister, I think he was a Mexican-American guy, priest, who wanted to speak on the campus at Texas Tech. And so I happened to meet this guy Dick Revis through another person who was a friend of mine, and I said, "Well, this is, you know, this we should be able to hear this guy." Well, the chancellor at Texas Tech at that time said, "No, he's a communist," and I didn't know really what a communist was. I mean, I knew that it wasn't too good, but I wanted to hear for myself. So I really was feeling like, you know, this was an important issue that I needed to hear what this guy had to say. So anyway, the chancellor wouldn't let him on the campus, and Dick Revis had really radicalized me. After that, I was having some troubles in school because I had a domineering father who wanted me to be a businessman or a lawyer, and I detested both. And when I took tests when I was younger, I could. It was very obvious that I should be a librarian or a teacher or a counselor or something like that. But my father said, "You can't make any money at that." Of course, my father didn't make a lot of money, but we had the backing of my mother's father, who was an oil man, and he wasn't wealthy, but he would keep us up to certain social status. So my father wanted to live his life through me and to push me into being a moneymaker, which I detested. So anyway, I rebelled from school, and I went back to I couldn't study because of the pressure, so I went back to Houston and went to University of Houston, South Texas Junior College in Houston. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and so I started going through therapy and talking to a psychological counselor who had been to Esalen in California, and so I started becoming really attuned to, you know, questioning all of society. And I worked at the University of Houston bookstore, and while I was there, I'd actually worked as a delivery truck driver. I worked at the bookstore at the University of Houston. I hear the music coming on, so we can continue.
We'll be back with Stan Hess. This is Mark Gankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Mark Dan Cost America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Stan Hess. We're having a very interesting time this AM talking about Stan's personal and political autobiography and the way in which he has traveled a very, very interesting road since the late 1950s to come to the place where he currently is in regard to Euro-American politics. Stan, we before the break, we were talking, I guess, about your time at the University of Houston. Go ahead.
No, that actually was a turning point in my life because while I was working at the bookstore at University of Houston, I started seeing what was going on campus, and I found out that, of course, the big thing then was the Vietnam War that was going on, and so this was in the late in the late 60s, and I happened to find out about a forum that was happening on the campus. I don't remember during the week; it was like a Monday or Tuesday night or something, and it was called the Young Socialist Alliance Forum. And so I thought, well, this would be interesting. I'll learn something about socialism. So I came in contact with Trotskyism and the Young Socialist Alliance, and it attracted me because they were anti-Stalinist And they told me about Trotskyism, who was supposedly a liberalizing force in the Soviet Union at the, you know, in the past, and he had been murdered by Stalin. So, it being having grown up as an anti-communist, you know, I took hold of the bait, and it sounded good to me. I could be anti-communist and progressive at the same time by being a Trotskyist. I was involved in the anti-war movement, and also I supported progressive politicians. Actually, Trotskyists, we weren't supposed to. We were supposed to support only Socialist Workers' Party candidates, which was the adult group, the parent group of the Young Socialist Alliance. But I supported Barbara Jordan in Texas, and she was from Houston, and she was the first black congresswoman, and I thought she was really a neat lady and very intelligent, and it was kind of a way to rebel against my folks and also to establish my own identity. And so I supported her candidacy, and then at the time they had a radical newspaper in Houston called Space City News, and that talked about anti-war actions in the city of Houston and Texas and around the nation. And then also, you know, I learned a little bit about the alternative culture and you know, the hippie lifestyle. So, you know, I played the role. I wore my hair long. I had hair down the middle of my back and a beard, and, you know, wore tie-dye shirts on the weekends. And so I was really enjoying that. And I went to a big anti-war march in Austin, Texas. I guess that was in 1969. And that really energized me. So I started meeting these leftists, you know, liberals, and then also some Trotskyists. And so I felt like I was, again, I was establishing my own identity. And so from there, also, I had to make a living. I had broken away from my parents, and so I had been working at the bookstore. I got fired from the bookstore because I was so frustrated inside, internally, rebelling against my past, and I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. So I used to go down to the basement of the University of Houston bookstore and kick boxes and scream. I mean, this is how wound up I was. And, of course, you know, the 1960s was a time of rebellion, so I thought I was really breaking loose from my own background and breaking away from that white-collar mentality, and that I was creating a new nation through my lifestyle and my politics. And so what ended up happening is I ended up getting a job driving a delivery truck for Harris County News Company, which was the name for the biggest magazine company that was deliver magazines to 7-Elevens and U-Totems and grocery stores, Piggly Wiggly's. I guess they still have those stores, Safeways and drugstores and everything. So that was interesting. And at the same time, and this is kind of interesting for people to understand, there was only one hangout in Houston where you could go if you were long hair. A hippie, so to speak, and that was a place called a Family Hand Restaurant, and that's where you used to, for those people that are my age, you might remember this kind of stuff. We used to drink, of course, beer, but Boone's Farm wine, apple wine, and a lot of the people were, you know, starting to take drugs then. So let's wait until the.
We'll be back with Stan Hess. This is Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Public Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
This is Mark Nancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Stan Hess. Stan has a most interesting autobiography, which takes us from Eisenhower Republicanism through the Trotskyite movement in the 1960s and the New Left. Stan's talked an awful lot with us today about some of the reasons why he thinks that initial transition took place. But as we continue unfolding his autobiography here, I think you'll discover through time that he has really encountered personally some of the real crucial issues in American culture and in the American political scene since the late 1950s to occupy the current place that he holds ideologically in regard to his concern for so-called Euro or European Americanism. And it's quite a story because I think as you listen to it, and for those of you old enough to remember some of these trends and events and where you were and what you were doing and what your own transitions were at that time, it's a very, very interesting microcosm of a much larger issue related to all of the trends and the changes that have taken place in American culture and in American politics since the late 1950s. And it also, I think, asks us to question where we are today in regard to a lot of things that maybe we used to consider as givens in this country that have resulted in a tremendous amount of change in your lifetime and mine that has us now wondering where we might fit on the political spectrum in regard to some of the core issues of our time. Stan, go ahead, sir.
Okay, I wanted to apologize for stammering and stuff. I'm still trying to wake up. Actually, I'm on
Stan, seriously, you give me an opportunity to say something to my own listeners.
Sure.
I have more trouble with that in this time segment because I find that I keep really strange hours because I'm always visiting people in hospitals and so forth. I'm a Lutheran clergyman. That's my other occupation. And there are a lot of times in the early morning when I struggle with that, and I am considered to be reasonably articulate in terms of my command of the English language, but there are times in this segment when I really struggle with it, so I hear you.
I just had a sip of my second cup of coffee, so I promise listeners that I will be a little better in terms of not stammering and stuff, but...
You're doing fine, and it's very interesting. Go ahead.
I appreciate it. When I was at the University of Houston, it was really an exciting time. There, a lot of us really felt as if we were part of the vanguard of the new culture, which was going to be not as harsh as our parents in terms of looking at the outside world. We were going to embrace people who were, economically deprived, and we were going to help the minorities, the blacks and the Latinos, and also the women's movement started. So we were going to correct all the ills that our parents had created by going along with the system, the capitalist system. And so I really felt a lot of hope, and I felt as if I was a part of the new secular clergy, which was, we were going to be the type of religious person that the ministers should be, because they were just, talking the talk and we were walking the walk. I lived in this area, I don't know if you know this area, Mark, in Houston called the Montrose. Well, back in the late 60s, that was a transitional neighborhood, and it was a lot of the hippie movement and the liberals moved into the Montrose. And so this was low-rent housing, and we were living among blacks and Mexicans and American Indians, and we thought ourselves as really being moral people. And drugs was going on then, but luckily I had grown up, both my parents were alcoholics, and I hadn't seen anything wrong with drinking, but drugs was a no-no. And the Trotskyists had a rule that if you took drugs, you would be expelled from the cause. Of course, some of the Trotskyists did anyway.
I find that amusing only in that I'm thinking there's a point of intersection between Jerry Falwell and the Trotskyites. But anyway,
yes. Of course. No, actually, you're going to like this, Mark. The Trotskyists were considered the Lutherans of the movement.
Oh, great.
The Trotskyists were the straight white guys. Predominantly, there were a lot of people like that. There were some important Jewish people too that went around the country speaking at these Young Socialist Alliance forums at college campuses. But and there was also a couple of blacks that spoke also at our forums who were very well educated. We were considered the straight no fun guys. And actually that was good for me, because there was a black guy in Houston, and I think I remember his name right. His name was Leotis Johnson. I think that's what his name was. And he was one of the guys that the leaders of the Texas Southern University Rebellion during the riots after Martin Luther King was assassinated. He was being followed by the Houston police, and they found marijuana on him, and they were going to put him away. They could have put him in prison for up to 99 years. And all I remember is he didn't actually get 99 years. He may have gone to prison for a year or something. But I was one of his supporters. And I remember in Houston, for those of you who are just interested in this, community or college broadcasting started at the University of Houston campus. At least that's what I was told. And Leotis Johnson was on this community channel in Houston in the late 60s, and I remember he was complaining about he was being treated, and I called in, and I got him on the phone during a break, and I said, Leotis, I'm a white guy, but I said, I support you, and black people are trying to get their civil rights. And so when he went back on the air, he said, folks, he said, it's not only black people that support myself and other black people, but white people are calling too. So I really felt, you know, I felt moral at that time, and so that was a big important thing for me to prove that I was a regular stand up kind of guy, and that I supported blacks, and I was trying to overcome racism and all this. And so at that time, too, I was working for Harris County News Company, and I met this guy at the Family Hand restaurant, this black guy, who I really liked. And, of course, I was breaking all the taboos. He had a white wife who was from Minnesota, and I got to know her, and I liked her. But anyway, he was telling me, he says, you know, I'm in the Teamsters Union, and you ought to get, you know, organize your property there. And so what he told me how to do it. So I went over to the local Teamster Hall in Houston and talked to some of the guys there, and they gave me these little interest cards. And so I went to the property, and I was really feeling like a Jimmy Hoffa at that time. And then, of course, the Trotskyists wouldn't have wanted for me to identify that way, but I felt like a Houston version of Jimmy Hoffa. So I went in. We had a warehouse where the real stand-up woman there was a Latina, and I kind of liked her. She was real feisty. So she was my inside contact in the warehouse. So she went around and got cards signed there. And then there was an older white guy who knew all the drivers, and so I gave him some interest cards. So he got guys that were drivers to sign up. And so we forced an election. And then what happened was there was this white guy who was a supervisor who talked to this black friend of mine at work, this black guy who I used to know that named Elvis, not the Elvis, but anyway, this guy lived over in Allen Parkway Village. Actually, it's where Kenny Rogers, the singer, used to live before it got integrated. But he was talking to this white supervisor at work, and the white supervisor said, we know this Stan Hess is behind this organizing, and we're going to fire his ass. And my black friend said, if you fire Stan Hess, we'll all walk out the gate. I thought to myself, hey man, this is working class power. This is cool. So we won the election, and I was just so empowered by that. I mean, I thought, here I am giving white, blacks, and Latinos a contract where they would get an increase in pay, they would get health benefits, they would eventually get a retirement. And I thought, well, I have done what I can here, and so 2 years later I left to go to California. But before I left, and I'm trying to give you this background so you'll understand, folks, where I've been in my life. There was a station in Houston, I think it's there, still there, called Pacifica Radio, as part of the Pacific Radio Network, and they were being threatened by Klansmen because they were a liberal station. And I went to an organizing committee at the Pacific Radio in Houston, and they were bringing in Abby Hoffman. And those of you who are old enough know that Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin were the two leaders of the Yippies, which was a combination of hippies and radicals who acted up and wore guerrilla costumes and stuff to anti-war rallies. But anyway, Abby Hoffman came to Houston, and he needed to be protected. So here I was, one of the security guards for Abby Hoffman, and the Pacific Radio helped organize the rally, and they showed the pictures of these two Klansmen who had been threatening them. And so when these two Klansmen came to the rally, myself and about two or three other guys, we stood behind these Klansmen to let them know that we knew who they were and that they were not going to disrupt the rally. So what happened, the rally happened. Abby Hoffman was a real rabble-rouser. And then later in the Houston Chronicle, he was quoted as saying, "Man, those Texas rednecks are mean." He said those guys protected us, and I felt like this is real solidarity across class and racial lines, and I felt like a hero in my own mind. And then what happened later, where these two Klansmen went to prison because they had bombed the Pacifica radio towers in Houston, outside of Houston. So I felt like I had established my credibility, and I was a union organizer, and I was a long-haired hippie, and I had helped protect Abby Hoffman and sent the Klan to prison, and so now I was ready to go to Berkeley.
And as I think you and I discussed, I ended up at Berkeley under slightly different circumstances in 79-80 at a Lutheran seminary out there. But go ahead, Stan.
But, yeah, in fact, I know where that is, because when I got to Berkeley, I lived at the Berkeley Inn Hotel, which was at that time at the corner of Haste and Telegraph, just three blocks from the campus, from UC Berkeley campus. I was like a lot of people. Berkeley was Mecca, and you had to go to Berkeley to be in the middle of everything. So I was in Berkeley there, and I worked at first at for a biker, Hell's Angel, who was really a sorry SOB, and I made a little bit of money to survive from him, and then I had to borrow a couple hundred dollars from my parents, which I eventually paid back, which was amazing since I was only making $1.60 an hour. But anyway, I started working for St. Vincent de Paul in East Oakland, and my route was Berkeley Hills and Albany, and so one of my places that I picked up, old clothes and stuff, was that Pacific Lutheran Seminary up in the hills. So I know where you're talking about.
Way up on Marin Avenue.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, what happened when I got to Berkeley is, I didn't realize, who was in charge at that time, because here I was, a white guy from the South, and I thought, well, I should be at least patted on the back for escaping, the Klan and the Houston police and all this kind of stuff. And I got there, I found out that I had two strikes against me. One, that my last name was Hess, and that sounded Nazi to them. And then the second thing was that I was a white guy, so I had to really prove myself. And because I was angry, because I had thrown away all my white skin privilege and moved to Berkeley, I felt like at least they could give me the benefit of the doubt that I was probably a pretty good guy. But I didn't understand the ethnic politics of the leadership of the movement, because there was a coffee shop in Berkeley called the Mediterranean Cafe, and that's where all the radicals hung out. And, you know, there were all those, you know, dark bearded guys with the John Lennon glasses, you know, hunched over tables, drinking lattes and espressos. And here are all these white women with the see-through dresses and the, you know, stoned out and all this. And I didn't understand any of this. But I knew that I was kind of on the outside. And so I almost moved out of Berkeley and moved to Canada. Actually, I wanted to go to Sweden because I thought, well, this place, they don't accept me. But I said, well, I'm here and I don't have the money to go to Sweden, and I didn't know how to get into Canada and to stay there. So I decided to give Berkeley a chance. And I had one friend that was going to Stanford at the time, and but he eventually moved to another area. But I just started getting involved in the culture. So there's the commercial break again.
We'll be back with Stan Hess. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Up to
back. This is Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Stan Hess, a most interesting gentleman, as he outlines for us his own autobiographical journey in life and the way in which that journey has impacted his own view of American culture and the American political scene, and what Stan has come to see as the importance of Euro-American politics. And when we get to that point in his autobiography, I think you will see the reasons for the tracing of this circumstance in Stan's life from the earliest days in Eisenhower Republicanism all the way through Trotskyite thinking, traversing a little bit of the New Left in Berkeley, and how that finally caused him years later to arrive at the point where he is now is one of the more fascinating stories, I think, that I have listened to in a long time. Wanted to warn Stan and also the listeners that this is a time, of course, of frequent commercial interruption on my show. So I'll take this opportunity to ask all of you out there to support the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can do so in one of three ways. You can contact us at www.republicbroadcasting.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-724-2719, or you can contact us via U.S. mail at Republic Broadcasting Network Office, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. The Republic Broadcasting Network needs your support as never before if we're going to continue to combat the forces of corporate media with all of the things that we are not told by corporate media, or are told by them, as the case may be, that do not relate at all to the truth. If you're interested in the truth, if you're interested in the truth at this particular time in American history, as we move into new and dark and uncharted waters in the American political and international landscape, you will want to be supporting the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, you can support us with your gifts by going to the World Wide Web and contacting us at www.republicbroadcasting.org. You can give us a call on the toll-free line at the office at 1-800-724-2719, or you can send your gift to us through U.S. Mail at 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Also, through RBN, you can have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling. Utilize those same contact points, www.republicbroadcasting.org. Give us a call at 1-800-724-2719, or utilize our snail mail address at 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. These are interesting times, folks, as we begin to look at what's happening in this country politically. I think the story of Stan Hess goes a long way toward explaining some of the political and cultural changes that we've undergone in the last 40 or 50 years in this country. Stan has a lot more to say to us and a lot more to tell in the next 2 hours. I hope you stay with us, because when we finally reach a particular point in this narrative, I think you will see maybe in his life some things that have happened in your life and mine in regard to an odyssey that we have undertaken as a country where we have not always understood the political and cultural and social and economic forces that have caused us to arrive at the particular place where we are now. And I'm reminded of this as I look at the American political scene and look at the way in which I have changed and have evolved politically, at the same time that certain aspects of my political belief system and cultural belief system have remained the same. This is an interesting thing to watch in the American political context and spectrum of right now, as we see a situation, for example, both as it pertains to constitutional rights and foreign policy, where in certain places a Ron Paul on the right may well be joined by a Ralph Nader on the left, where Pat Buchanan on the right may be joined by certain counterparts at the American Civil Liberties Union.